Welcome to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast with Darren Mitchell. If you're a sales leader looking to take your leadership to a whole new level, then this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring tips, techniques, and strategies to help you take your leadership to the exceptional level and allow you to enjoy more money, more meaning, and better sales results. Welcome back to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. This is Darren, and we are on the last workday before the Easter break. And absolute pleasure today to have Amy Smith all the way from Sydney. How are you, Amy?
I'm well, Darren. Thanks for having me.
It's we've been connected for a little while, and I've been looking forward to having this conversation because you have extensive experience in not only corporate, but you've made the transition out of corporate into entrepreneurship. And one of the key vehicles you have used is a wonderful platform called LinkedIn. So love to delve into, I guess, your experience and your perspectives, because the people that listen to this podcast, they may be entrepreneurs themselves, but a lot of them are going to be in corporate and have sales targets to hit. And LinkedIn is one of the sources of truth, if you like, for customers. So really looking forward to this conversation. Before we delve into, and there's a lot of topics I'd love to cover with you, just for the listeners' perspective, can you give us a bit of a background on the Amy Smith story? Where did it all start? And really what's interesting, I like to hear from people in terms of what led you ultimately to doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, so I think it depends how far you want to go back, Darren, but I kind of always had a bit of an entrepreneurial streak in me, I guess, as a kid. And a couple of things that sort of happened was, even at high school, you know, I was that kid that was, I would make, you know, bags and handbags and sew them out of old materials and then sell them at school. And I just thought that was normal, but apparently that wasn't so normal. And so there's a few things like that that kind of happened early on. But I think I followed the kind of typical path that most people would take, which was, you know, everyone at the time said go to uni and get a good job and follow that kind of mainstream path, which is exactly where I found myself. So I studied commerce at uni and ended up working in HR and executive recruitment. Mm-hmm. Were my first jobs through after uni. I was a typical millennial where travel was a big part of my career as well, particularly in the early days. I wanted to be able to travel and work and have a good time. And so found myself in various roles, you know, across London and Canada and also here in Australia. And then there was a bit of a turning point in my career where I kind of got back to Sydney and I thought, okay, this is it. I'm really going to accelerate things. I'm in this company. I want to really rise through the ranks in this company. And then about 6 months later, myself and 250 other people were made redundant.
Wow.
And so that kind of put a bit of a spanner in the works for me and I guess kind of disrupted my whole concept and idea of job security at the time.
Yeah.
And that kind of lit a bit of a fire again in my belly to go out on my own and start to do my own thing. So I actually, after that role, started working in a coaching organization. And my role there was really headhunting ex-CEOs and helping them to launch their own executive coaching brands and businesses and set up peer advisory groups for other business owners. So I really, really loved that education space around mm-hmm. helping business owners to grow and helping other people to really launch their own brands as well. And that kind of naturally kind of evolved where I had people in my network saying, hey, can you, you know, support me? I'm looking at changing careers. And because of my HR and recruitment background, I was doing a lot of career coaching on the side. Whether or not I really truly knew what I was doing at the time was more so very inflexible and very kind of ad hoc and kind of happened really organically, just helping other people. But then I intentionally went out and built my first business outside of that role, which was a career coaching business. And I used LinkedIn to do that. So mm-hmm. I didn't have, I guess, the luxury of coming from a corporate background experience where I had, you know, 40, 30 years in the industry and I had all of these networks of contacts that I could lean on. I really had to launch from scratch. And so that's where LinkedIn came into play for me, because I started to think around, you know, I'd use that platform in a different capacity when it came to recruitment. And that kind of led me to launch, was able to quit my corporate job within 12 weeks. And then as I went on that journey, I had other business owners reaching out to me and saying, I've seen how you've grown your brand and your following on the platform. Can you teach me? And that's how it sort of morphed into the business that I run now, where I have, you know, programs and support people to grow their brand on LinkedIn as well.
I should mention also that you are the founder of Align Tribe. You are a coach, a trainer, speaker, mentor, all around expert in LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a great business that you run, and there's lots and lots of people that can, I guess, can benefit, but probably don't necessarily tap in yet to the full strength of what LinkedIn can offer. If you think back to in your corporate career and doing a lot of the headhunting stuff, how much was LinkedIn used back then? Because I know from my perspective, talking to a lot of corporates, they're starting to use LinkedIn more and more, but a lot of them still rely on their existing networks versus just going out and saying, how can we go into the areas that we don't know or we don't have the network set up yet? So what was your take on that?
Yeah, so for me, it was my number one tool that I used, and it was actually interesting because I think I intuitively went to use social media and LinkedIn, in my roles, and that was a little bit different to perhaps other people that, were relying on networks and other ways of bringing in business, which I did use as well, of course, because I think one really sort of feeds off the other as well. But it was kind of intuitive for me to go online, and so I ended up being, someone within the organization that was really kind of learning it, falling on my face, figuring things out, and then teaching others how to use it as well. And so that kind of really, for me, it was a big tool both in the recruitment space, and that's how I used it in the beginning, was to really find and locate where the real decision makers in my instance were around, where they were hanging out on LinkedIn. And then how to approach them, what to say in what order, and what would get the doors shut and what would get the doors opened. And really sort of learning through trial and error to do that. And then, figuring out a bit of a system that worked from there.
It's interesting as you're talking about doors shutting and doors opening. Even today in 2024, there are so many people, and you probably get this as well, people who are connecting with you, and it's either part of the connection request or a very, very quick follow-up message that they go straight into pitch mode. And what I think LinkedIn can do is it can make the marketplace a lot bigger for us, so we can actually have a bigger pool of people to potentially have as future ideal clients. But there's a certain method that you need to be able to go through in order to build that level of credibility. So part of that is branding. So for somebody who kind of utilize LinkedIn as that platform, rather than let's we can talk about some of the technicalities about how to do that, but how important is the positioning of you in terms of personal branding? Because for a lot of people, they don't necessarily have a big company standing behind them. So how do we start to develop this level of credibility when we're using something like LinkedIn?
Yeah, it's a great point, Darren, because I think it's really crucial in today's world, and if you're wanting to stand out. And what I find is really interesting is that it's the people that put in that extra 1% or extra 2% effort into their positioning and brand that makes all the difference. It's not like you have to spend 12 months creating the most perfect LinkedIn profile. But if you can do, go through the extra mile of what other people don't do on the platform, not just simply copying your resume across, but actually, as an example, telling a little bit more about your career story and how you got to where you are. If you can add that level of personalization and connection onto the platform, it puts you ahead of the game in terms of whether people are going to want to connect with you or not. Because ultimately, I think whatever space that you're in, and especially in sales, people buy from people. And so there needs to be that level of connection first and foremost. And you mentioned there around people, sort of doing the hard pitching and the hard sell on LinkedIn. And I'm kind of weird in a sense because I kind of like when people do that. Number one, it tells me exactly what not to do. And number two, it means that if people are showing up like that, there's actually a really low base of effort that you need to stand out and be different. And so if you can show up with a different approach, and if you can position yourself as someone that is there to serve, is there to help, is an authority in your space or more of an advisor in your space, it's going to absolutely catapult you above the crowd with little effort. So I think the base is really low because people do that. And if you can actually, be that person that takes that extra 1% or 2% effort to position yourself in the right way, you have a complete unfair advantage on the platform.
I love that, but I'm gonna play the devil's advocate for a second, Amy,
Yeah.
because here I am I'm a sales guy, right? I'm a sales leader, and I'm under pressure by my bosses to hit my target, right? And they don't care how you do it, you just got to get your number, right? So that almost creates this perceived level of pressure to go out there and hunt down prospective customers, and we try to retrofit our product or our service into anything. So as soon as I get a live customer that maybe connects with me, then it's almost like an unconscious response that I'm just going to jump in and pitch my product, because if I don't, I'm going to have my boss chewing me to say, "Why haven't you converted?" So what do you say to people who, and you already said it's a really low base, what do you say to people that, okay, LinkedIn is a phenomenal platform, and if you think about the number of the percentage of people who are decision makers who sit in the platform, use the platform, what do you say to them where they have this pressure to get results in the short term versus LinkedIn as a platform probably is a little bit more of a slower burn or a bit more of an organic longer term play? How do you sort of I guess balance the two?
Yeah, it's a really great point. And you know, in my previous experience, I've been in roles of sales where it's commission only. And if I didn't make sales, I didn't eat that week or I didn't pay my rent. So I totally can empathize and get that position as well. I think there's a couple of things at play. I think one of the things that people really underestimate is the power of their profile as well. And so if you've got your profile that's set up in the right way, it's almost like you're selling without having to sell. And your profile can actually become a lead generation tool all of on its own as well. So even if you're sending out a message that in your mind might be a bit of a softer approach just to connect and, you know, make that connection with that decision maker, one of the first things that they're going to do is they're going to go and check out your profile. And so, if your profile is set up in a way that leads them towards making their own decisions, qualifying themselves, being compelled to want to reach out to learn more, then you're 80% of the way there, just through your profile alone. And then there's the concept of, I like to sort of talk about, you know, slowing down to speed up, because it depends on how you kind of measure things, because you could burn that lead or you can burn that prospect on the first message and never hear from them again. Or you could have maybe one or two conversations where there's a little bit of back and forth. You're sort of qualifying them along the way. And so the conversations you do have are higher quality, are with the people that are, you know, do actually have the solution that you're selling, or you know that there's a problem that can be solved. And you have more meaningful conversations that way as well. So it's totally a balancing act of playing the numbers game and making sure you've got your targets in mind and reverse engineering that so you know exactly, you know, the activities that you're doing is going to lead to the end results of hitting your sales targets for that quarter or whatever that looks like. But I think there's some nuances into the approach as well that you can take. And I think a lot of people on LinkedIn as well, if you put yourself in the position of that decision maker and they're receiving 100 messages of the same kinds of messages each and every week, you almost have your blinders on and your blinkers on where you're not even acknowledging it. They couldn't care less. They're not going to click through to your profile. Whereas if you could be that person that can show up a little bit differently, you've got the chance of them connecting. You've got the chance of them actually coming through your profile and feeling compelled to want to speak to you further as well.
It's a really interesting point, because in the sales training that I do with teams, I always say this, and it might sound controversial, but I say to them that your customers are not, they're not waking up each day looking for, actively searching for your product. They're not wait there. And sometimes organizations think that they have the best product, and you've got to have a belief in your product. But
Totally.
sometimes they think, oh, we've got the customers lining up just wanting to knock down the door, just like Apple, right? People line out outside of Apple stores thinking, oh, I've got to get the first iPhone 20 or whatever it's going to be next time, right? That's what we've got to understand, that people are not searching for that. So we have to think about what is the problem that exists, and how can I potentially solve a problem in a slightly different way than my competitor that makes it stand out? And I think that then translates to your LinkedIn profile, because if people do have a level of curiosity to look at your profile, then what is your profile going to be that is different to every other 99 messages that a decision maker gets in that week that's going to make them stay for longer than 7 seconds?
Exactly right. And I think there's, you first got to identify that, look, there is a problem that needs to be solved, like you said, because people ultimately they're in their own worlds. They're thinking about themselves. If you put yourself in their position, if you're reaching out to CEOs, like there's a million things on their plate to do that day. They're fighting fires. They have got meetings after meetings. Like there's a lot going on, and so it's just understanding that they don't care about you yet. So you need to give them a little bit of a reason to actually pay attention and care in the first place. So I think you're exactly right.
Because and that's going to be about them. What are their pain points? Or is there something we can create that might even be a little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out, that if we know something about a competitor or somebody else in their industry, it might just pique the interest to say, oh, I think I might investigate that a little bit further.
Exactly right.
So the other thing I'd like to know from your perspective, working with so many businesses and executives and so forth, is like the go-to-market strategy, because there's a lot of organizations that say, hey, we want to have a really broad brushed approach to marketing and putting our name out there, building our company reputation, but also building our personal reputation. I sort of come from, and it's probably down to the mentors that I've associated with over the years. I have this belief that less is more, and when I say less is more, be really pinpointed on a channel and figure out where your ideal customers hang out, and then really hone in on that and get really good to the point where you're known in that area. And I know you work with a lot of businesses, and I've got a lot of experience in this space. For salespeople and sales leaders listening to this right now, who perhaps have a scattergun approach to say, let's just put stuff out there and hope stuff sticks. What do you say to them in terms of your experience around being really, really targeted with a single channel? Now, whether that be LinkedIn or whether it be TikTok or whatever the case is for that particular industry, how important is it to be really, really laser focused on a channel to be able to build that reputation and build that profile?
Yeah, I think it's super important. So I think that sometimes we can feel like we're superhuman, and it's okay to feel like that. And you probably are, in a lot of essences of what you do and the skills and experience you have. But I think sometimes we only have so much time in our weeks and only so much time in our day. And so what we want to be thinking about is like, where am I going to get the best ROI for my effort spent? And so when we put it through that lens, often we think about, okay, well, first and foremost, where are my clients really hanging out? Where are those decision makers? Where can I go and either intently search for them and find them through their job title or whatever that looks like? But also, I think a big portion of it that a lot of people don't think about, particularly on LinkedIn, is the fact that we have so many people on there that I call LinkedIn lurkers that are sitting there and are watching behind the scenes and don't necessarily engage. And it's really true, that you laughed, Aaron, because it's there. And I was once a LinkedIn lurker myself. I was a professional stalker in the executive recruitment space, I used to always tell people. So I think what a lot of people can discount is that if they're not getting, like if you're sharing content as an example, and if you're not getting, over 10 likes or you're not getting a few comments, you think that no one's seeing that, or you think that, what's the point of doing this, right? When actually most of our best buyers, and particularly if you're working with high-level decision makers or people in higher positions in corporate, they will not interact mostly. Like they will be the ones that sit back and watch. And there's also the networking effect of LinkedIn as well, which is really powerful. So even if you're speaking, directly to a particular CEO, let's just say in the technology space or whatever you're targeting, if you're still speaking specifically to that CEO in technology, it doesn't mean that your message can't reach out to people on the platform who may know someone who's in that space as well. So I think sometimes we have to really think about just because we're being specific, like being specific is the best way to stand out on the platform. And it's almost like, I think you've heard me use this before, it's like we've got this target and this dartboard and this bullseye in front of us. And the closer we can aim that dart in the middle bullseye, it doesn't mean that other people can't reach out or other people can't find what we're doing. It just means we're going to be speaking to more of the right kinds of people and we're going to get a better return on our effort. So you can absolutely have a scattergun approach if you like, but from my point of view, when you try to speak to everyone, your message becomes quite vague, it becomes quite blurred. The people on the other end don't really see the importance of what's in it for me or how does this fit me. And I think some of the best salespeople out there are the ones that they can really show that they understand their client or their customer. And once their client or customer feels understood, you automatically become the solution. So I think you're making it a lot harder on yourself if you're trying to please everyone because we just can't do it, right? So the more specific you can be, the easier it becomes, because then you allow people to then raise their hand and say, you sound like you're speaking to me. This is the exact problems I'm experiencing right now. I think we should have a conversation. And you don't get that if you're trying to speak to everyone.
And I think that's so true. The other part that I'd add to that is we have to demonstrate a level of patience, and that is it is not about and look, I've suffered from it as well. You put out a post and you think, you know what? I've poured my heart and soul into this post. I've shared a personal story or a challenge or whatever the case might be, and nobody's liked it, right? Or there's no comments. And I'm thinking, oh my God, has anybody seen this stuff, right? But then there are other things you put out there. And this is why the algorithms in things like LinkedIn are so, for me, so unpredictable. You might have better insight into this than I do, but thinking, how is it that one post goes absolutely nuts? Another one that you think is a high quality doesn't get any likes or any comments whatsoever. But the whole point of the whole thing is, from what I'm learning, is you have to have a level of patience. And I think a lot of salespeople in particular, perhaps maybe through pressure to perform and get a number, don't see that instant return for their effort. So they think, oh, this is not working, so I'll move on to something else. How important is it, even from a business perspective, to stay the course, knowing that, hey, you're in the right area, you've got the right intention, you're fine-tuning what your message is, you're becoming better at terms of identifying what your unique brand is. How important is it to stay the course? And is there a point where you say, you know what, this is just not working, I'm gonna stop it?
It's really good point that you bring up, and thanks for mentioning that, because I think as humans we have that dopamine hit in us where we're like we have this innate want to be liked, and so sometimes when we're on social media and we share something, like you said, Darren, you spend time on it, you think this is amazing, I've really hit all these pain points talking to my clients, and then there's crickets, right? So it's hard to sort of get through that. But I think there's a couple of things that you want to be thinking about, and time compounds everything. So there's a snowball effect that happens on LinkedIn, and I think something to take note of as well for people listening, if you are feeling like you're in that position where maybe you had a lot of activity at the start when you started to post, but it's kind of plateaued a little bit, there's an element of LinkedIn kind of testing you in a sense as well. So what works really well on LinkedIn and what LinkedIn looks for as a platform are people that engage and have their activity up consistently. So you're going to get a lot more back from LinkedIn if you're someone that, even if you're posting once or twice a week, but you're consistently doing that over 6 months or a year, then if you're someone that goes all guns blazing, you do 7 posts in 7 days, and then you never go back and post on the platform for the next 6 months. The person that does it a little bit slower but more consistently will win in the end, because you're teaching the algorithm that you're active, and the more that you can teach LinkedIn that you're active, the more LinkedIn is going to want to reward you by showing your content to more people as well. So I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind as well. And it's not just sort of relying on your content either. The way I look at it on LinkedIn is you want to have like an offense and a defense strategy running at the same time. So if we think about like, any great sporting team, I don't know, Darren, who's your favorite sporting team you've got right now?
The Melbourne Football Club, the AFL team.
AFL team. Cool. So if we think about AFL, right, and any kind of team there's some teams that are known for their offense. And they're known for that, or they're known for their defense, right? They could be like weighted a bit differently. But in order to win the game, they're going to need to have both. And so it's the same with LinkedIn. So if we think about our profile and we think about the content that we're putting out, that's like our defense strategy. That's like casting our net to make sure that the people that are wanting to reach out, the people that have that intent can find us, can reach out, can raise their hand, and we can start conversations. But we also want to have that offense strategy, like you said as well, where we're being proactive, we're making sure we're getting in front of the right people, because then it starts to work as a bit more of an ecosystem where if you're getting in front of the right people, they naturally jump on your profile. They're going to binge a few of your posts as well. So if you've done 3 or 4 posts, and it's likely that not everyone in your network is going to see every single post that you do, that's just the nature of it. And so what you allow for is you allow people to consume more of your content in a quicker amount of time, and that builds up trust a lot faster. So when you have those two at play, you're not simply relying on the algorithm to say, oh, it's only got two likes and this post has failed, right? It really depends on what you personally deem as failure. And looking at the different metrics as well. So I think just for some people, they get really hung up on the likes and the comments. But what we want to look at over time is our profile views and the people that are actually coming to view our profile, because it's going to tell us a couple of things. It will tell us if our level of activity engagement and if we're being seen is on the increase and that's trending up. And it's also going to alert us to who those people are in different categories as well. So if, for instance, you're looking at reaching out to operational managers in the engineering space, and if you can see that you're starting to attract more of those people in the engineering industry that are coming to look at your profile, there's a good chance that your message is landing and you should do more of that. If you're not, then it's a really good indicator that there's probably some work you can do in your content to make sure that you're reaching those people as well. So I think there's a few different factors at play. And I think, like you said, it is about being patient. It's about looking at the analytics, and it's allowing that time to really snowball on LinkedIn as well for you, that really builds things up.
It reminds me, as you were talking there, Amy, of a book that I think it's called 3 Feet from Gold. And it's a fairly old book that it's almost like a metaphor. I think it's a bit of a parable that people were digging for gold and doing trenches, and it was just so much hard work. There was no sign of any gold line whatsoever. And they kept digging and digging and digging, and they just had enough. They said, "There's no gold here, we'll stop." And they're only 3 feet from probably the biggest gold streak in the history of the world. And the thing is that, certainly from my perspective in the sales game, is you don't know how far away you are from striking it really well. And I was going to say strike it rich there, but that's not the right terminology. But and I often hear people say you're only one connection away from either your business exploding or them being able to connect you with potentially an even better ideal customer. So here's my question to you, because there'll be a lot of people who are listening to this who get connection requests from people who, at least on the surface, don't appear to be in their ideal customer avatar space. And so they think, well, why am I gonna connect with those people? What I have found to be true is sometimes if I connect with somebody who, at least on the surface, doesn't appear to be in my ideal market, I don't know who they're connected to. And often there's a connection that they have that then leads to me being connected to that person, and anything is possible. What's your thought on that? Because I know there are a lot of people that just randomly go out and connect with as many people as they possibly can so that their numbers can get bigger in terms of their followers. But there has to be a balance, I guess, between the ideal customer avatar and others.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's, LinkedIn at its core is a networking platform and a professional networking platform. So I think, years and years and years ago, the way that people would interact with LinkedIn was very much from a recruitment point of view, or it was very much like you would meet someone in person at a conference or a networking event, and then you would connect on LinkedIn. So you'd only ever meet with people that you'd had the capacity to meet in person. That was a lot of how people used it. What I've seen really evolve on the platform, and particularly now where, we're in remote work, we've obviously got clients and customers that spread out all across the world as well. It does mean that our, tentacles, if you like, on LinkedIn have to expand in order to reach those opportunities. And so the way I kind of think about it is that, first and foremost, everyone's in charge of their own profile. So if you've got personal preferences around who you want to connect with or not, that's completely up to you. That's absolutely fine. If you're thinking strategically and you're wanting to look at it from, really expanding your opportunities and pipeline, then I look at it as a process of elimination when people are coming in to connect. So the first thing that I would do is I would just check and think, okay, does this look like a fake or spammy profile? And that's not going to add any value at all. That's a really easy, like, I'm not going to accept this person. Then that's fine. You can move on with your life. Then you'll have the ones that are really obvious as well, where you're like, okay, this looks like an exact fit from a client perspective or the industry, or there's something where you just instantly see opportunity. So that's an obvious yes. Then you've got this gray area of people in between. And I think this is where you're alluding to, Darren, where you've got people, and it's almost like you've got to think of these 6 degrees of separation effect on LinkedIn. Because one of the good things compared to other social platforms is that even though you're just connected, so you and I are connected on LinkedIn, Darren. So we're connected. If I share a piece of content and you engage on that, you like or you comment on that, then it actually pushes my piece of content out to your network as well. And then if you're pushing it out even further into what's called third degree networks on LinkedIn, that's when your posts can go viral as well. And so you want to think about exactly what you kind of mentioned there around if this person isn't the exact right fit, could they know someone who is? Is there an opportunity for maybe a strategic partnership? So maybe they're working with the same client or customer base in a different way. And I would be thinking of things like that. I would be thinking about, you know, if they were to engage on my piece of content or they were to look at my profile, you know, is there potential opportunity there through their network? And so I would always sort of go on the side of I would accept people and then figure it out later. And people will show you who they are. Like if they jump into your inbox and they hit you with a spam message, you can absolutely get rid of them, block them. It's no big deal, right? But the other side of things is like, what if it worked out to be a great connection? And what if it worked out to be a great opportunity that can put you in front of a room of your ideal clients or customers? Or, you know, you get invited to some event there, and then, you know, you're able to make further connections at that event. So there's all sorts of different ways to think about it. It's not necessarily just a straight line. So I think you've got to really think about it as like, you know, you're an octopus and you're putting out your tentacles of opportunities. And the more kind of octopus legs you have out there, the higher the chance of reaching the right kinds of people as well.
And I'm so glad you said that, because what we don't know is, and particularly in sales or building businesses, you don't know potentially where your next customer's coming from. You can have an idea as to what the characteristics are of your ideal customer, but you don't necessarily know where they are, right? And I've had cases where, you know what, I've ended up either having somebody on the podcast or ended up doing some work with somebody that it just came through a random connection, or a connection of a connection, that ended up having a relationship built. There was a commonality there, and all of a sudden it happened. But then I'd think back, so well, you know what, if I hadn't have been active, if I hadn't have put that message out, if I hadn't have connected with that person, that would never have happened, and I wouldn't have had the benefit of meeting and working with this particular person. And I often think this, like now, like 20, 15 years ago when I was still in corporate, and compared to what I do today, I would never, like, I probably wouldn't have even got to meet you based on what I was doing 15 years ago. And it's just, you just never know where things are going to head. So always be open to connecting and broadening your network.
Absolutely. And I think it's a little bit of a sense of being okay to put yourself out there as well. I think many of us feel like we're, you know, how is this going to be perceived? Or am I going to be judged by other people if I'm putting out content? Or am I going to be able to add enough value to the platform? Or, you know, is my message going to come across the right way? And all of those sorts of things. And I think a lot of it is, you know, quite valid. We're all human. We all have this, you know, self-doubt in the back of our mind a lot of the time. But I think if you can just, you know, start before you're ready and you can really start to put yourself out there. And really build it, like just like building a muscle at the gym, you know, you get stronger and you get more confident as you go along. That's going to really help as well, because then you're going to get that feedback loop of, you know, you are making meaningful connections, you are adding value, there are opportunities that come through. And it only takes, like you said, Darren, like, you know, someone random to land in your inbox one day and say, hey, I've been following your content for the last 3 months. I think it's worthwhile we have a chat. And you go, well, where did that come from? Like, I've never interacted with this person in my life.
You've
And
actually been a
that
lurker, was what you've been. You haven't.
that happens to people all the time. It happened to my client Lisa the other day, you know, made a couple of tweaks on her profile. She'd been experiencing really low engagement on LinkedIn, you know, for the last 6 to 12 months, made a couple of tweaks on her profile, and she had a client that had reached out in the next 24 hours. And she's now working with that client for the next 6 months. So it does happen. We just got to put ourselves in the way of opportunity.
Well, it does, and it just reminds me. I was doing a leadership program yesterday, and I was saying to the leaders, and they're relatively new leaders to this particular business. And I said, if there's one thing you guys need to understand, is that as leaders, people are watching your every move. So what I want you to do is just imagine everything you're doing from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, just imagine there's a camera following you around. They don't necessarily have to have a microphone, but just imagine there's a camera. Would you like to sit down and actually watch that? And I didn't put my hand. How's that? I put my hand up on LinkedIn and I didn't actually put my hand up. Anyway, would you be happy to read and watch that video of people watching? So as long as you have the right intention and you're clear on what message it is, and if you have a voice and prepared to put it out there, of course there's going to be people that don't resonate, and that's okay. But you're not worried about them. You're worried about the people who will resonate, because they're potentially ultimately the people you'll end up working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's that, that trust and that connection that can be built, over time. And people essentially, they want to work with peers. They want to see you as, that peer-to-peer relationship as well, and that sort of advisory relationship as well in sales. So if you can position yourself as someone that is there to serve, is there to support, is there to help solve problems, rather than that, desperate salesperson that's just trying to dive into everyone's inbox, then, you do have that unfair advantage, and you can actually build that trust and that credibility a lot faster, with the people that you want to connect with too.
And the good thing about that, Amy, is, and you know this better than anybody, is you'll end up working with higher quality people if you stand your ground, very clear on what you represent, who you are, what's important to you, what service you provide in terms of the problem that you solve, because you'll attract higher quality people and higher quality clients, as simple as that.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
if for people, and look, there's going to be people who are entrepreneurs listening to this, there'll be people who are in a sales role, there'll be people who are leading sales teams. And I'm sure most of the audience that listen to this have LinkedIn in some sort of capacity. For a person that's been on LinkedIn for such a long time, and you have pretty much built a really successful business on the back of using LinkedIn as a market strategy, what are some tips, if you like, that people can take away in terms of, if they look at their profile, just little tweaks that you think that if you just made a little tweak in this area, that could separate you just a little bit from your competitor and maybe just pique the interest of your ideal customer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can talk all day on this, Darren, but I won't, because I know we don't have that amount of time. But I'm a total LinkedIn nerd, so you've just opened up a can of worms there. But when it comes to your profile, there's a couple of things that make a really big impact. Number one is, if you have visual media on your profile, then naturally you'll get 21 times more views than someone else who is a like-for-like profile that doesn't. So when we talk about visual media, we're talking about the cover image up the very
Okay.
top of your LinkedIn banner. There's also opportunities now to add a featured section in your profile where you can add media files. So, for example, if you're a salesperson and you have some client case studies or some customer case studies of the work that you've done before, adding those into the featured section of your profile is super, super helpful, because it shows instant social proof around the work that you're doing. And it's also a bit of that point of difference of people that just wouldn't have them at all. So that's a really good way to stand out. The other really good way to stand out is the recommendations on your profile as well. So if you have three or more recommendations on your profile, then that actually tells LinkedIn that your profile is more complete, or complete in the eyes of LinkedIn, because it doesn't matter what we think, it doesn't matter what our friends think. So if they've checked out your LinkedIn profile and they say, "Oh, that looks really good," it actually only matters what LinkedIn think from a platform perspective. And so what I've found from what I've tested is, if you've got three or more recommendations on your profile, you will tend to rank higher in the search results to be found in your category. So that can be as simple as, asking ex-colleagues or current colleagues or other clients that you've worked with just to write a few kind words about you on your profile. That's a little extra 1% things that not many people do, that can really help you to stand out. And the third thing that I think would be really worthwhile mentioning is that LinkedIn will give you a certain amount of characters to utilize on your profile. So in your about section, as an example, or your experience section. And so what I always say is, you want to actually utilize that full real estate that you have available to you. So in the about section, as an example, what you don't want to do is have like one line explaining what you do, or you don't want to just copy and paste your resume across. What you actually want to do is use that opportunity to sell without selling, showcase your credibility, give people a little insight into the person behind the profile, ways that they can connect with you, ways that they can contact you to find more, and utilize that whole space because LinkedIn works really well with keywords, just like Google search does. And so if you've got the right kind of keywords in your profile for where you want to be found on LinkedIn, it's going to be a lot easier for you to be found by the right kinds of people, particularly those people that are intently searching for what you do as well.
Love it. Love it. Great, great tips. The other one I wanted to ask you about was when you go into somebody's profile and the first thing you see is, well, sometimes they don't have even a photo at all. You think, okay, that's a bit strange. But their headline. Now, my belief, and this is just me, is I used to think that when I was in corporate, hey, I've got to put in VP of sales or chief revenue officer or sales leader, et cetera, et cetera. So your thoughts around putting in your title or what you do versus some words in there to demonstrate how you help ideal clients. What's your take on that? And how better or not is it having either in terms of the approach?
So the way I lean on this is you want to have both. You want to have your title and the keywords that you know your market, would intentionally search for. So we don't want to get too fancy. We want to think about like if I was in this position, and I was in the position of a decision maker and I was looking for this solution, where would I go? And what would I be searching for? And so you want to make sure that you've got the right keywords showing up for that. So that often is your job title. Beyond that, we do want to have what I call either a credibility statement or a doing statement. And that's kind of wrapped around like, well, just because you have that title, what does that actually mean? How are you helping people? What's the end result? What's the end outcome for them? And so it might be, for example, when I was supporting CEOs, it would be, helping CEOs to grow their businesses, or it would be, helping executive coaches to launch and grow their own coaching business, whatever that is for you, right? And so you're thinking about like, what's the actual outcome of them working with you and having the solution that you provide? And then when you can marry those two together, that becomes really powerful because you're hitting the people that have the intent for what you want. You're also aligning, I think, to the company brand and how you want to represent yourself. I think that's really important. So if you're working for a company, there might be marketing guidelines and things that you have to be aware of how you need to show up. And so I think having that job title is really important for that respect. But then you can play around with the doing statement, which is going to capture people's attention around the what's in it for them. Why would they want to connect with you? Often it's because they're looking for a solution, they need some help. So, what does that look like for them?
Now, that's a great point because I think statistically, and correct me if I'm wrong, statistically, when people go to your profile, there's about 6 to 7 seconds that they have to either, and I often hear LinkedIn being described as it's almost like your shop window into your business, into your organization. So if you don't capture their attention within that first 6 or 7 seconds, most people will leave. But what really was frightening was of those people that leave, pretty much all of them will never come back. If there's nothing there that's interesting.
They won't, and the worst part of that is they'll go to someone else that is a like profile for you, which is typically a competitor. So that's even worse. So you do want to make those first 6 to 7 seconds count. You're exactly right.
Because the other thing with this is if you think about LinkedIn, we are but one person, right? And we can only do so much ourselves each and every day. Because I do want to talk to you about a sales process in a sec. But the fact that you've got a really good shop front in your as your LinkedIn profile, you don't know when people are going to look at that. And that could be when you're asleep, right? But you've got to be thinking about what is the impression that I want to create when somebody who potentially is in my ideal market comes across my shop window. Is that going to be something that might interest them to the point where they might lean in and actually put the hand up, send a message, whatever the case might be, or be receptive to me sending them a message that I don't even know about yet that I'm going to send one. So it's about, well, when you're sleeping, when you're doing other things, it's almost doing some work for you. Is that a fair?
Very fair. Yep, absolutely. We want our profiles to be doing the heavy lifting. So we want them to almost read, like in marketing, we would have like a landing page where we would capture a lot of leads and we capture a lot of attention that way. And so you almost want your profile to read like a landing page where you're really sort of, talking about the problem, you're agitating the problem a little bit, you have ways for them to reach out, maybe to self-qualify along the way. So it actually becomes less about you and more about your ideal clients or customers that you're looking to attract.
Yeah, love it, love it. Now, as we kind of bring this into a close, because I'm conscious of time, and you mentioned before the offense versus the defense strategy, and I love the description of that. Let's talk about offense and in relation to proactive selling. Now, there'll be organizations that people are listening to this with organizations who have a sales methodology, whether it be challenges, spin, whatever the case might be. How can we use LinkedIn in an effective sales process? And are there any, not so much rules, but guidelines in relation to, say, outreach? Because one of the things we'd love people to put their hand up based on the things that we're posting and generating that interest so they come to us, which is great. But no sales team is going to be successful just sitting there waiting for the phone to ring. We have to be proactive and go out. So outreach is a really important thing. Now, a lot of organizations do cold calling. A lot of organizations run campaigns, but more and more organizations are using LinkedIn as an offense strategy to, I guess, poke their ideal customer. So thoughts around that in terms of not so much what to say, but how often we should reach out. How quickly after a connection request, for example, should we be reaching out in a proactive manner to a prospective customer? But at what point do we say, hey, Amy, great to connect. Love to know a little bit more about you. And at what point do we go, hi, by the way, this is the problem I'm solving. Is this something that might be interesting to you? What's some thoughts around that? Because there's a lot of people out there who are salesy, who are very coming across as sometimes spammy as well, which we need to be conscious of.
It's a really good point, and it's definitely, the approach really matters in this sense, because as we've sort of touched on before, because there's so many people doing it wrong on the platform, or so many people going in for, one message, really hard pitch with a very long message and all about them, nothing about the client or customer, right? People's level of skepticism on LinkedIn is quite high. So you have to kind of think about, well, what are people feeling and experiencing when they first connect with someone? Their first instinct is that you're going to bombard them with a pitch, and you're going to show up like that. So when you can actually show up the opposite way, you build trust straight off the bat. So the first thing that we want to do is, like, when we're connecting with people, we want to connect, and then we actually want to show appreciation. When we actually show up with appreciation, we are already putting ourselves in a category that we're different. And so what I mean by that, it can be quite quick to, when you've connected with someone, it can be you've just instantly connected, and then you say, thank you so much, it's great to have you part of my network, really looking forward to, learning more about what you're doing, or really looking forward to keeping in touch here on LinkedIn. Like, really soft, like nothing really about them or you, it's just you're showing appreciation. When someone receives that, then they're going to be a little bit more receptive to hear more, because we've lowered the buyer's resistance, we've lowered skepticism a little bit in their minds, so they're a little bit open to a conversation. All right, and then what we want to look at is we want to transition that conversation into where we want to lead them in our sales process. And so everyone, like you said, will have different sales processes of what that looks like. And so the big picture goal is you want to connect with people on LinkedIn, and then you want to bring them offline, and you want to bring them into your sales process offline. And so the way that we do that is we want to sort of transition and perhaps qualify at the same time, where we're really starting to lead the conversation towards not even the solution that we're selling, but the first step is we want to actually identify, do they have the problem that we solve? Before we even talk about what we have to offer, and before we even talk about our solution, they're still not there. Skepticism's still high. They're like, I don't know you. Who are you? We want to have like a genuine human conversation where we get curious, and we put our curiosity hat on, and we kind of work out, okay, in order for this person to be an ideal fit client or customer, what do I need to know from them, about their situation, about their team, about their business, whatever it is. And then if you can have a couple of, back and forth conversations there when we're transitioning and qualifying people, then we can have the opportunity to say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. We've got a few things that I think might support you with some of the things you're working on right now. Are you open to a conversation? You know, and then that's when we have the permission. And that's when we can take that conversation offline. It might be a coffee, it might be a phone call, it might be Zoom, it might fit into whatever sales process that you would normally follow. But I think the real key is that, you know, there are probably a couple of extra steps in there, and this is where the patience comes into play. Because we want to separate ourselves from being the real gung-ho people at the start and the real people that are just going to come in and pitch. We actually need to allow buyer's resistance to come down and skepticism to come down first before we're even able to have the conversation that we want.
It's really powerful because I say this to salespeople all the time, and I ask the direct question of the salespeople that I'm training, and I say, "Hey, do you guys like to be sold to?" And it's very rare that anybody puts their hand up. And I say, "So who likes to do buying?" And they all put their hand up. And I say, "Okay, so let's look at what we're doing as a sales team right now. How many of us are out there selling?" And when I say selling, you're trying to influence people to make an educated purchasing decision. But what you're really doing is you're trying to convince them that your product is the best product for them, and you haven't spent enough time earning the right to provide a possible solution to that particular customer, right? So, and any wonder that you're getting objections that are getting thrown up, right? So I said, this is a long-term game. You have to create the impression that whether you purchase from me today, tomorrow, next week, or next year, or whether you purchase from me at all, that's okay. I'm still going to stay in the game, but I want to keep myself top of mind. And how do I do that? By providing value. But it comes back to what I said at the outset in terms of there are some salespeople who are under so much pressure to hit a number that they think every live customer has to be a possibility of a closure of a deal. And so they push. And when push goes, resistance goes up.
Absolutely.
So what we're talking about here is you can use LinkedIn as a really, really powerful marketing tool, but also a sales tool. But you've got to earn the right for that customer to lean in and be interested, and then be able to take them from being curious into committed, and doing it in a really cool way.
Absolutely.
The other thing I'd say is you probably need to also remove yourself from any perfect outcome. So don't think that just because I'm talking to this particular potential customer that they're going to become a customer. I'd like them to be, but ultimately it's their decision. So don't convince them that you need, don't use all these closing techniques to try and close the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes down to, like, you know, if you're in sales, you know, often we want to make an impact. We do want to help people at the end of the day. And so if you're helping someone to make a decision, if that decision is to go ahead and you know, have those conversations and work with you, awesome, great. If that decision is for them is a no, and they've got more clarity on their current situation and they're actually going to learn from that and be better from that, then that's a great win as well. Obviously it doesn't put the commission in your bank, but it also makes sure that you know, your intent is there and people can really, really understand and they can really sense what your intention is. And so I think if you've got the right intention, like you said there as well, and you are building pipeline for the long term, because you'll have conversations with people and you know, they'll say to you, oh, look, it's just not something on our list right now, but reach back out in 6 months' time, reach back out in 3 months. And you can schedule those people in as well. And so you've got this ongoing pipeline of opportunity that snowballs over time as well. And I think the more, you know, when we sort of talk about your positioning and your authority, the more work that you've done on that on the front end, the easier these conversations become. And the lower your buyer's resistance becomes over time as well, because you've already built up that trust from the outset.
Yeah, absolutely. Because statistically, and I think it's still around the same, about 3% of buyers are in a buying now sort of cycle. So, which means 97% of the people that we talk to are not ready to buy now. And there's been some stats that I've shared with a lot of sales teams that most salespeople actually give up after the first contact. So if we have a conversation and there's no immediate sale, I say, oh, there's no sale there, so I'll just go on to the next one. 80% of sales that are made come after between the fifth and the 12th contact. So what that says is stay in the game, continue to add value. And a person that we both know, Taki Moore, used to always say, still says that if you can articulate a problem better than your customer can, they will automatically attribute to you as to having a solution. So when that happens, just be ready to provide that solution, but don't be so wedded to the outcome that you have to sell them or close them. When they're ready to buy, they will naturally lean forward, right?
Absolutely.
And that can be the start of a long-term fruitful relationship, so for both parties. So hey Amy, this has been a really phenomenal conversation. I don't know about you, but can't believe it, an hour's gone so fast.
Going quick.
If there was one final tip that you could leave that we haven't potentially covered, or that's something that's been top of mind for you around LinkedIn or around selling or positioning, what would that be for the listeners?
Yeah, I think number one, just be open to putting yourself in the way of opportunity. Sometimes that means we have to rethink the way we're doing things. Sometimes that means we have to be a little bit brave to get out of our own way and try something a little bit new. So I think if you've been sitting back and waiting for permission to really attempt LinkedIn or upgrade your profile or share some valuable things on the platform, take this as your permission to start experimenting and start getting out there on LinkedIn, because I think it all starts by just playing in the arena, and showing up in the arena and making sure that you're able to be seen and heard by the right people. And so if you can take those first steps, things really start to naturally snowball and evolve from there. So absolutely get out there and put yourself in the way of opportunity on the platform.
Love it. Progress over perfection. So
That's
just
it.
get out there and get it done.
Have you
So,
listened to me before, Darren?
what's that?
Have you listened to me before,
Oh,
Darren?
just a few times. Just a few
Yeah.
times. So, Amy, for people who are listening to this, I'd like to know a little bit about more about you and Align Tribe, and also specifically to connect with you. Where's the best place for people to find out where Amy hangs out?
Yeah, well, I kind of have to say LinkedIn, don't I? Because I've been talking about LinkedIn, but
Just go to my Instagram page.
it absolutely is the place I hang out the most is LinkedIn. So if you go forward slash on LinkedIn, Amy L. Smith Coach, you'll find me. AmyLSmith.com is my website, so that will also lead you to anything. If you are looking for some implementation steps off the back of this to support you, you're welcome to go and grab my ultimate LinkedIn blueprint, which will help you sort of take those first initial steps. You can get that at AmyLSmith.com/blueprint.
Brilliant. And I can vouch for that. I have downloaded it myself, and I thought I had a pretty good LinkedIn profile set up, and then I looked at that blueprint and I think, oh, there's still some tweaks. There's always room for improvement. Can
Yeah.
always take it to the next level. So I'll put those in the show notes. So I actually encourage people to A, connect with you, but also go to amylsmith.com/blueprint to get access to that. So Amy Smith, absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And yeah, we'll have to do this again because I'm certain there's a lot more we can talk about, specifically around
Absolutely.
LinkedIn.
Totally. Thanks so much for having me, Darren. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Exceptional Sales Letter Podcast. I trust the information in this episode has been helpful in your journey towards becoming exceptional. And remember, please take the time to rate the show, subscribe to the show so other people can find it. But also, if I can help you, jump on my calendar, go to leadwithdarren.com, and let's have a conversation about how I can help you along your journey to being exceptional.